Good morning, sports fans, and welcome into another edition of the Saturday Show on 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone. I am your host for the day, Utah Utes Insider for KSL Sports, Michelle Bodkin. As you can tell, Jake Hatch is out today celebrating his daughter's birthday, so before we get going with this show, we absolutely want to extend her a very happy birthday. I am really excited. We are on remote today here at Macy's in Providence, Utah this morning. Making this all work behind the glass is, of course, our producer, Jason Jones, and on scene, our remote tech, Sean Croshaw. Now, if you're a Utah State Aggie fan, you better be coming on down to Macy's here in Providence this Saturday, October 7th, from 12 p.m. to 3 p.m. for fun, prizes, and chances to win tickets to the Utah State-Colorado State game happening tonight. Or you could win a Macy's gift card. There are chances to win every hour. And don't forget, Macy's has you covered for all your tailgating and game day needs with items ranging from smoked meats to fresh cut fruits and veggies. Macy's, happy shopping. Now, additionally, I will be joined by our very own Ben Anderson from 10:30 to 11 to talk some Utah Jazz, and Jake Scott will hop on from 11 to 12 to help me wrap up the show with some Utah and BYU discussion. And as always, we will bring you technical fouls and anything else that comes to mind. Now, with that being said, we would be sorely remiss if we didn't start the show with a little Utah State discussion being in the middle of Aggie land. As we mentioned earlier, Utah State has a big game tonight against Mountain West Conference foe Colorado State with a kickoff at 8 p.m. Our very own Hans and Scotty caught up with head coach Blake Anderson earlier in the week to discuss the state of the team and the big matchup.
It's time to talk Aggie football with the head coach of Utah State, Blake Anderson. Presented by Macy's. Happy shopping on 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone.
Joining us now, Blake Anderson, head coach of Utah State, after a thrilling come-from-behind victory on the road against UConn. Coach, how the heck are you?
Hey, Coach.
I'm good, guys. How are y'all?
Good to hear from you.
We're good. Hey, you can win games all different kinds of ways. That was a new one, losing your quarterback, having the big comeback. Now that you've had a chance to look back on it, you've been in a lot of games. That was a different one for sure.
It was. It's only the second time in my career that we lost the turnover battle and the explosive play battle and still won. So, I mean, we're super fortunate to get out of it with a win. Tons of injuries, as you guys saw late in the game, playing a little bit of everybody. Anybody that was still available on the O-line was playing. And then Coop came in and I thought did a phenomenal job considering, being thrown in the mix. He was very calm and handled himself well and didn't turn the ball over and move the ball, move the chains with his feet a little bit and connected really well with the guys. So we needed it. It took all of it. It was not how it was designed, but it was a win.
Coach, can you give us some of Cahill-Stead update?
Yeah, I mean, he got his bell rung pretty good. He took a shot from behind by the DN, and just so happens when he did, he also got hit almost simultaneously from the front with a looping linebacker. I mean, it was kind of bang bang. So he's not ready yet. He won't practice today, and we'll keep an eye on him. We're going to prepare with Coop, and we'll just kind of be smart and really thoughtful about how quickly McKay comes back. We don't mess with concussions. I mean, he's clearly out of it the other day. Didn't really know much of what was going on. So we're going to be very careful. And when he comes back, we'll make sure that he's ready when he does.
Kind of kept that offensive line, as you mentioned, together with a little duct tape and baling twine. How are the injuries along that front in preparation of this Colorado State game?
Yeah, we're looking better. A couple of those guys are limited today. A couple are back, in terms of what they can do today. We're expecting them to be a little bit more full go. We were beat up pretty good. Ended up with guys playing that we had not had any, really indication that they were going to be in the mix. They handled themselves relatively well against a big physical front and gave us a chance to claw our way back in it. But didn't see Calvin Knapp and Wyatt Bowles and Bryce Radford playing. And even honestly, kind of thought, Maui might be the center, but Poulet had just always kind of found a way through. I thought all those guys stepped in and did a really good job. To some degree, short notice. They knew they needed to be ready, but even knowing is different than having to actually do it. we found a way to score 34 points with those guys. So you got to give them a tremendous amount of credit for being able to battle through.
Coach, I want to talk just a little bit more specifically about Cooper Legault, because it was interesting watching him take the field and just in a possession or two be able to hit the touchdown and hit it accurately and look good and put up three touchdowns in this game. I was just impressed by his readiness, even going through the controversy, or not the controversy, the adversity that he has gone through. Just talk about him being prepared and ready to be able to come in and save that game.
Well, if you know Coop very well, I mean, it shouldn't surprise anybody. That kid is a great teammate. He has done nothing but work his tail off since we made the change at Air Force. He understood why we made it. He really, honestly, Coach, I get it completely. I understand. I wasn't doing what I needed to do or even what I was really even asked to do. And all he's done since that point is work his tail off in the meeting room, on the practice field, still studies film as if he was a starter. He's been able to sit in here next to McKay and honestly help him as well. And McKay's still learning the process that Coop's been through for a few years. He knew at some point his opportunity was going to present itself, didn't know when and needed to be ready. And I thought he did a great job. He made good decisions. He didn't put the ball in harm's way, moved the chains with his feet, made good checks when he needed to, and threw the ball well. And I mean, as I told you guys before, man, it was a close conversation anyway. There were little things that I thought that were giving him trouble that we needed to keep working on. And he improved in some of those areas. Even on Saturday, there were still a couple of issues that things that we still saw that can be glaring if, depending on the opponent and then how the game's going, could get you into trouble. But he has worked exactly the way you would need a guy to work under really difficult circumstances. And if he was ready for the moment, and we win a game because he's ready for that moment.
I know that you're knee deep in the preparation of Colorado State, but I think I love sharing stories of kids and how they came to be where they're at right now. And the story of Jalen Royals, and I don't know if I've told Hans this story before, of how he ended up at Utah State, but here's a kid who just showed up at an open tryout, essentially, and you guys, by the end of it, offered him a scholarship without really seeing much of what he could do with pads on. And now he had such a huge performance in that game. Let's see, what, 7 catches, 185 yards, and 3 touchdowns. Should have been the Mountain West Player of the Week, but that's beside the point. But just kind of go through the story and tell how you discovered this diamond in the rough and how he's really developed into the player he is right now.
Yeah, he's from Georgia and was at Georgia Military, you know, junior college down there. I think maybe due to COVID and some of the stuff that just wasn't really seen that much in high school. I think people knew this guy can run pretty fast, but the offense he was in, and then with COVID and not really getting a good look, he ended up at Georgia Military as a freshman, just played sparingly, caught a handful of balls, and you could see, again, that he was a well-built kid and could run fast, but there just wasn't a lot there. Our staff saw him on tape, and there wasn't enough to go on tape alone. We've got interest if you do. We've got a camp coming up. If you'll show up and what we see on tape matches up, we would have interest. And that's really all they got from us. And his dad got him on a plane. They flew out. He ran 4.33 and 4.31, and everybody's heads turned around sideways, and we made him run it again, and he did it again. Then we put him through drills, and he caught everything we threw and was a super good kid, pleasant. We did a good check on him, and all we found out was nothing but great things. So we're like, man, this is a guy we can't let go. We offered him. He ended up committing and showing up. And then last year, he got here super late. He got here in August, and we just – it was a lot to learn in a short period of time, and that's why our fan base didn't see a lot from him last year. We had him open a couple times and kind of underthrew him. But over the offseason, you just saw a transformation – in his confidence level, his technique. Coach Cephalo and him have a great relationship. He works hard. He's learned a lot. And you're seeing a guy now that is playing with a tremendously high confidence level that's got legit speed, hands, the ability to elevate, and understands what we're asking him to do. And, guys, he's got another year left. So we're really fortunate to have found him and love having him here.
So, Coach, there's just a couple things on a football field that I wouldn't want to do. I wouldn't want to return punts necessarily. I would not want to be a wing protector on a field goal or extra point squad either. I hate that wing protection. It's tough. It's assignments. You've got to really lean down. You've got to set feet. And when I watched UConn's wing protector not do those things, I thought, interesting. Walk us through the call and walk us through what you saw in film. Did you guys know or feel like you could get the heat on a field goal or an extra point in that moment?
Well, we did. I thought Nick and Bobby and Joel did a great job. You know, they look every week, and we don't take an extra point for granted, and definitely not a field goal. I mean, you're talking about games are going to come down to the last possession, and it's going to be one-score games. And I think somebody said we're 9-1 in one-score games. I mean, that's a lot of stress since we've been here. But in this particular case, we did have conversation during the week that if it came down to that kind of game, that we felt like that our max block from that position where we had Ike was a possibility to change the game. We had a similar idea against Iowa. We brought him through an interior gap. I remember, you mean, we felt like we could block a field goal and change the game. That one, you know, we got a penalty called and didn't agree with the call, and we didn't make the block. This one was a little bit more straightforward, but we did hit them in a spot we felt like they were weak, that their technique was a little flawed, and felt like in that particular moment, if it was a field goal for the win, if it was an overtime game, in this case, the extra point made all the difference in the world. I mean, we didn't want to be in overtime. We wanted to win it outright, and we were able to do that with a very well-designed block and very well by our special teams and defensive front.
You know, a lot of coaches out there say they take special teams very seriously, and I think they probably think they do, but you guys ramp it up to another level, going all the way back to, you know, 2021 when you blocked two punts from Matt Ariza in the Mountain West Conference Championship game. Ike's now got 5 blocks on his career. Is that just something that you've always just believed in, like the way you can alter a game and spending extra time working on things like that?
It is. I think it comes from my playing career at Sam Houston State with Willie Fritz and our defensive staff just preparing blocks and ways to change the game. I carried that on into my career with Scotty Conley and at the Trinity Valley level and on into throughout there. I've always just felt like that in a game, sometimes if you're outmatched physically, that's a huge swing play that you can create. Some people don't take it as seriously as we do. Some people, I think, do some things that are just not very sound. And when you get a guy like Ike that you can find a way to get clean, he just has a knack for getting his hands on the ball. We don't win that championship in 21 without some of the special teams plays that we made. And clearly, the blocks in the championship game are huge and huge momentum changers and just allowed us to break that thing wide open. I just have always believed in it. I've been a special teams coordinator and coordinated different segments during my career. Our staff believes in it, so we're going to put time, energy, and starters, on them to have the best chance to be successful and strategic and explosive, if that makes sense.
Coach, I was just looking at some of the rushing yards in this game against UConn, and Faison, Briggs, and Booth all in kind of minimal yardage. What was the situation with the rushing game, specifically with the running backs against UConn?
Well, honestly, just to be truthful, we're getting our butts kicked up front. I mean, they were massive, and they were tossing us around. We had some gaps open, and we just couldn't get out of the arm tackle. They were able to disengage from the O-line and get a hand on. We had a couple of really, really close calls, one where we didn't make the safety miss, one where a linebacker literally is getting blocked to a pancake block, and he's still able to get a big arm out and grab. D lineman, the same thing. They were built as big as anybody we've seen in quite a while, and the toughest part was to get movement and maintain movement so that we could crease that line of scrimmage. Now, we obviously threw the ball well in the back end, but we weren't able to get the run game going like we wanted to, and that's hopefully something we can continue to improve on and be better at this week. We'll need it. We did just enough to stay ahead of the chains. We weren't explosive, but we were efficient, if that makes sense, and It's something we got to get better at. We got to get better at running the ball and stopping the run to be the kind of team that we want to be. And we got to use the bodies we got to do it right now and schematically try to find opportunities to be better at it too. And but to be very blunt, they whipped our tail up front. They were just bigger and more physical than us up front. And that's not something you like to admit, but it's where we're at right now. We got to keep working to get better at it.
You're up against probably the best wide receiver you've seen this year and maybe the best wide receiver you'll see all year in Torrey Horton at Colorado State. What makes this guy so special, and what can you at least try to do to slow him down a little bit? He's already got nearly 550 yards receiving on the season.
Yeah, slowing down is the best thing you can hope to do. You're not going to stop the guy completely. He's too good of a weapon. Length, speed, great ball skills, great feet. He's an NFL caliber receiver, hands down, probably a day one, day two type guy, if he's healthy and continues to progress. But he's not the only weapon. That's where it gets really difficult. The tight end that they brought in, the transfer, is a really good player. Other wideouts are just as difficult to defend. They spread it around to everybody. They're a lot like us. They don't really care who gets it. They just want to get it out and get it into open space. I think the system is built for what they have. And, they've got the weapons to be really, really difficult to defend. And it starts with Horton, there's no doubt, but he's not the only weapon, and it's way bigger than just one guy.
Well, I think pretty much the entire world watched the Colorado State-Colorado game that went into double overtime, and it was nasty, and it had all kinds of pregame conversations and attention that was drawn to it. And I think everybody got to see Braden Fowler, the quarterback, go out there and throw for nearly 400 yards against Colorado, and he did it on a kind of a big scale. Now, he did throw some interceptions in that game, but he showed that he's got an arm as well. Just talk about the quarterback you're about to face.
Yeah, I mean, they've never struggled to recruit quarterbacks in that system. I mean, the guy wants to throw the ball. Matt Mummey's their coordinator, and Jay is right there, I think, calling plays with him. They're tapped into the air raid system that's being run all over the country and a bunch of high schools, and they're not going to have trouble finding a guy that can spin it that wants to. And he's no different. Long, powerful arm, gets the ball out relatively quick and can throw it really anywhere, reach anywhere on the field that is needed. Fits him extremely well. And as we talked about, he got all the weapons that he needs. So he's not hamstrung without having the weapons to go to. They went heavy on the O-line and wide receiver positions in the offseason and brought in guys that have been able to impact their team in 1 year. They look completely different than the team that we played a year ago on the offensive side. They're way more balanced, got a lot more weapons, and the quarterback fits. So it's a challenge. Our defense is going to have their hands full trying to slow them down and minimize the score and figure out exactly who's, where the ball is going next, because they're going to spread it around to everybody.
I'm trying to think the right way to phrase this question, but are you concerned about your ability to get a pass rush with four? I mean, you can manufacture a pass rush with blitzes and things like that, but to be able to get there with four, is that something that has you concerned in the early part of the season?
Yeah, absolutely. Man, we lost some really good pass rushers to the portal. They're rushing passers all over the country, and we plugged guys in and at this point have just not gotten them up to speed yet. Some of them are young and experienced. Some of them are still technically learning some things. It hasn't happened as quickly as we'd like, but that is definitely a concern. Joe, he has to make that decision each week. Can we get there with four? Do we have to add five or six? What does that do to the back end? And how vulnerable does that make you? That is a dilemma for every defensive coordinator. You'd love to be able to just let four guys go and get after it and that be enough. But if you're getting that, great. If you're not getting that, then what are the answers? That always puts you, that always exposes you to some degree.
That was some good stuff from Hans and Scotty earlier in the week, talking to Utah State head coach Blake Anderson. Can't help but sit there and listen to that and hear some interesting kind of connections to what it feels like Utah's going through at the moment. A little unsure about, what's happening at the quarterback position. trading back and forth between some quarterbacks. Cooper Legault obviously getting benched for McKay Hillstead, their freshman, and then obviously coming back in last week to get that epic comeback win against UConn. The Aggies are currently 0-1 in Mountain West play. They're going to be looking for their first Mountain West Conference win tonight against Colorado State. Big game, again, 8 p.m. kickoff, and we will see how this goes for the Aggies. Looking forward to this one. Okay, well, Utah State fans, I am hanging out here at Macy's Grocery Store in Providence today, Saturday, October 7th, from 10 a.m. to noon. You are encouraged to come here, though, from 12 p.m. to 3 p.m. for fun, prizes, and a chance to win tickets to the Utah State-Colorado State game happening tonight, or a Macy's gift card. There are chances to win every hour. And don't forget, Macy's has you covered for all your tailgating and game day needs, with items ranging from smoked meats to fresh-cut fruits and veggies. Macy's, happy shopping. On the other side, I will be joined by our Utah Jazz insider for KSLSports.com, Ben Anderson. The Jazz are currently in Hawaii and getting ready for their first game tomorrow night. Looking forward to this conversation with Ben on the other side. You are listening to the Saturday Show on 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone. Welcome back, sports fans. You are listening to the Saturday Show on 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone. Jason, getting us moving along here with the good bump back music. I think he told me we were doing a 70s theme today, and I'm here for it. I'm an old soul, and well, the body's maybe not quite as young as it once was, but it's still young enough. Definitely too young to probably know anything about the 70s, but we love it here. So great job, Jason, on the music. We appreciate it. Now, we are going to turn our attention to some Utah Jazz talk. The Jazz open up their season tomorrow in Hawaii against the Clippers with a 7 p.m. tip here in Salt Lake. And to give us the full scoop of all that, and I don't know, we might get into some like Utah football BYU talk as well with him, is our Utah Jazz insider, Ben Anderson. Hey, Ben, what's going on?
Hey, Michelle. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for giving me someone to talk to, since Jake Hatch is such a slacker.
Having all these kids.
Oh, my gosh. And the audacity of them to have birthdays, too. It's
selfish.
Just unreal.
Selfish.
Well, you know, this is interesting, kind of having you on the other side, because I feel like it's usually you grilling me, and it's kind of going to be the other way around.
Well, let's do it.
Yeah, let's do it. So, I mean, we're talking about season two of the Will Hardy era. I think the Jazz surprisingly outpunched their weight last year from what a lot of us were expecting. What are you wanting to see in year two from this team?
Yeah, I think if you could find the consistency that he had in year one, now that's kind of a strange word to use because everyone remembers they jumped out to like a 13-3 start or 12-3 start to the season. And had, I mean, they had the best record in the NBA for like the first month of the year. And then if you watch from there, they really slowly fell apart and, you know, traded Mike Conley and blew up the team and lost a lot of games late. And had it not been for that hot start, I'm not sure we would have been as high on the Jazz season last year. But also, I'm not forgetting that I think the Jazz purposely lost some games last year. They were not all that interested in making the playoffs. They wanted to add more young talent to the roster, and they were able to do that in the offseason. So I think finding consistency in the team is going to be key because we do see a lot of coaches, and this isn't, you know, just NBA basketball. This is all of sports. This is college football. This is the NFL. We're seeing it right now with the New York Giants with Brian Daboll. Jeff Hornacek had this problem when he took the Phoenix Suns head coaching job. Being really good your first year often sets you up for disappointment your second season, what they call the sophomore slump, you know, and we've seen that. And that's just, it's a little bit of a dangerous thing because then all of a sudden people start to question, oh, is this guy actually a good coach? It's like, yeah, he is a good coach. He was just way better than we expected his first year. And maybe the expectations of the second season rebound to where they should have been, but we unfairly judge them off of what that first season looked like, and I think that's really a dangerous thing to do. So when it comes to Will Hardy, a long answer for your question is I think if you could get to a point where they just kind of consistently have an identity, play a certain way, and are competitive, I think that's enough. I don't think they have to make the playoffs or anything.
I think one of the more interesting things about Will Hardy is that he's a young guy by all accounts. I mean, he's as old as some of his players, some of the players in the NBA. He's younger than some of the players in the NBA. What is it about him that you think resonates so much with his guys and why they seem to play so hard for him?
He's very authentic in my interactions with him, you know, and I get the impression that the players behind the scenes feel the same way. He's super intelligent. He went to Williams College, which is one of the best colleges in the country, and played basketball there. And, you know, it's a weird story how he got to the Jazz. Like, he knew a guy in college who knew Greg Popovich with the Spurs, and they were like, yeah, this kid's different. You got to give this kid a chance at something. And certainly Greg Popovich saw it and made him the video coordinator, and he worked his way up the coaching staff. And what was important early, and they recognized he had talent early. So I think he really is just a naturally talented coach, the way we see some of these young coaches across the country in all sports starting to pop up more than we did, you know, when I was younger. Michelle, when you were younger, you just didn't see a lot of 30-year-old coaches in any sport. No. I think we're starting to see it more and more. But on top of that, I think learning from how Greg Popovich treats his players, which, you know, famously, he would yell at Tim Duncan just as readily as he would yell at, you know, the scrubs on the bench. He didn't have any problem talking to his star players the same way he would anyone just trying to get the job in the NBA. And then he probably learned that under Ime Udoka, too, who he followed to Boston, who was also assistant coach with the San Antonio Spurs, who was notorious for being able to tell players, you know, like it is. And that doesn't mean he doesn't have your back as a player or as your coach, but he does have the ability to tell you the truth about what's working and what's not working. And we'll run with that. And I think we've seen that from Will Hardy. And I think that does resonate with players. People like knowing the truth. People like being told. People like honesty. They don't want to play a bunch of games. And I think even though the fact that he's younger, he's pretty mature in that sense.
Now, the Jazz brought in three new players from the draft that everybody's excited about. Taylor Hendricks, Keyonte George, Bryce Sensabaugh. They spent a little bit of summer league kind of banged up, it sounded like. What are you kind of expecting to see from these young guys this year in their first appearances?
Yeah, we saw Keyonte George, and he was fabulous. In fact, before he got hurt at the summer league, he rolled his ankle in one of the later games in Las Vegas. He played all of Salt Lake. I thought he was the best rookie in the NBA that we saw over the summer, which is really saying something because this was a pretty good draft class, and he wasn't even a lottery pick. He was pick number 16 overall. But my understanding is Danny Ainge has had his eye on Keyonte George for a really long time, dating back to his high school days. And the story of Keyonte is kind of interesting. He's been a known NBA prospect for a really long time. Everybody knew when he was in high school he was going to be playing in the NBA. And for some of those guys, it's just kind of the process of going through the motions of college basketball, going through the motions of AAU to get yourself to a point where you're set up in the NBA. And so whatever criticisms he had last year at Baylor, whether it was his body at times, effort at times, I think a lot of that had to do with the understanding that, hey, man, I'm just, you know, I'm not here to play college, as Cardale Jones said. I'm just biding my time until I get to the NBA. And then once he got to the NBA, he looked absolutely terrific in the summer league. And then we haven't seen Taylor Hendricks or Bryce Sensabaugh. They were both hurt over the summer league. So their debut tomorrow is what I'm most interested in. I want to see if Keyonte George can pick up where he left off in summer league. All reports are, behind the scenes, some of the people I've been able to talk to is that Keyonte George has looked just as good in the NBA with these guys and scrimmages as he had in the summer league, which is extremely promising. And then we don't really know about either Taylor Hendricks or Bryce Sensabaugh. I think that's going to be fun to watch. And, you know, it's going to be rocky. Rookies always have a rocky start. Even the best rookies in the NBA are usually slow to really figure it out. The pace of the game, the size, the speed with which the guys play, the physicality is just a totally different animal. So I think that's going to be exciting to watch, and it's a good chance to see it tomorrow and then again on Tuesday.
Yeah, absolutely. I think one of the most underrated things about rookies in any professional sports is they're young still, and their bodies are still developing. Your body looks completely different when you're 19 versus when you're 25 and even 30-something years old. So I can so see them maybe getting pushed around a little bit until they grow into themselves. Talking about older guys, though, more experienced guys on the roster, you know, Lauri Markkanen, Jordan Clarkson, all the names that we're very familiar with, what do they need to do in order to not only help along some of these young guys, but continue to make strides with this team that I think fans are wanting to see?
I really think playing their game is key because they carried such a heavy load. Lauri Markkanen and Jordan Clarkson both had the best years of their careers last year. Jordan Clarkson, a full-time starter, really for the first time in a long time, maybe I think a second season with the Lakers, his second season in the NBA on some of those terrible teams after Kobe had left the league. Jordan was playing, or maybe it was even Kobe's last couple of years, which the Lakers weren't very good, and they were kind of trying to figure out what their next identity was going to be. He played there, but you know they weren't all that meaningful of minutes. And then last year, he averaged 20 points, 4 rebounds, 4 assists. Those are pretty fabulous numbers, and really carried a big scoring load. And then Markkanen, you know, was borderline All-NBA, made the All-Star team, ended up starting here in Salt Lake City. I think him doing kind of what we already talked about with Will Hardy, which is establishing what he did, I don't want to say in year one because it was his fourth or fifth year in the NBA, but really with his first year with the Jazz, establishing that that is the baseline and that's where he's going to grow from and even improve on, I think that's really important because when those guys can carry the load, it makes it easier for rookies to not have to be something that they're not. And that's why it is remarkable when we see guys like Donovan Mitchell, who stepped in and, you know, within 15 games of his career was arguably the best player on the Jazz and certainly was able to carry a big offensive load. The guys that can do that are extraordinarily unique, and it's not really an easy pathway. And in fact, I think it comes with some flaws because you don't get to develop as slowly and naturally as maybe that would be ideal. And then you end up with weaknesses in your game that I think are hard to work out as you get older. So the best thing for Keontae, Taylor, Bryce would be if these veteran guys like Jordan Clarkson, like Lauri Markkanen, like Colin Sexton, who we haven't talked about, if they are able to do their role and make life easier for the rookies to come along slowly, not have to be big contributors, I think that's going to be best for the Jazz and the most successful. And that doesn't mean you're going to, you know, stymie these guys' development. I just think it's going to allow them to reach their ceiling more naturally instead of just being thrust into the fire.
Again, Utah Jazz tip off tomorrow at 7 p.m. in Hawaii against the Clippers. Ben, what do we know about this Clippers team that this Jazz team is about to face off against both tomorrow and on Tuesday?
Yeah, this is a pretty dire season, I would say, for the Clippers. You know, after they traded for Kawhi Leonard, well, actually, he signed on in free agency, and they traded for Paul George, and all of that happened within, I mean, like 2 minutes of each other because the deals were linked. Kawhi wasn't going to join the Clippers unless unless they were able to acquire Paul George, and they did both of those things, and it was a big move, and everyone thought, okay, the Clippers are lined up to win their first title. This is going to be a super team. The Clippers are overtaking the Lakers as the dominant franchise in L.A. Steve Ballmer, the owner, has all this money. And it's just never materialized. I mean, there's been a lot of injuries. They've had opportunities. You know, the year the Jazz lost to the Nuggets in the bubble in 2020, Jazz were up 3-1 and ended up losing 4-3. I think a lot of Jazz fans forget that the Clippers did the exact same thing in the next series. They took a 3-1 lead, and Denver came back and beat them 4-3. And that kind of was the first taste that, hey, maybe this Clippers roster is a little flawed. Maybe it doesn't have everything they need to win a title. And the problem is with those deals that are so expensive with the guys they have, and they traded so many draft picks to get Paul George, they've never been able to introduce kind of the young talent that they need to keep this thing afloat and help it take the next step. And now they reach this point where, truthfully, Kawhi is going to start exiting his prime. Paul George is going to start exiting his prime, and the injuries that they've had add up on your body over time. And this might be their last real chance to win a title with this core. Now, I think they're building their own arena. Steve Ballmer is willing to spend whatever money he needs for this team to win and stay competitive. I don't think this means the Clippers are going to fall back to being the Clippers team that we all grew up watching, which was just one of the jokes of the NBA. I think those days are behind them. But opening a true championship window, which you have when you have a top 10 player like Kawhi and a top 15 player like Paul George, is maybe the hardest thing to do. And they had done it, and then they never really got all that close to winning a title. So I think they've got to win this year. If they don't win this year, they're going to have to seriously retool in the offseason. And that's a lot of pressure on a team that actually hasn't even come all that close to winning a title. And when you look around the NBA, they're not as good as the Nuggets. They're not as good as the Suns. They're not as good as the Bucks. They're not as good as the Boston Celtics. I just truthfully don't see a pathway for them to win. And that's going to make this season maybe feel like they're stuck in mud a little bit. So this is a strange team. This is an interesting team for the Jazz to face off, and kind of an interesting dichotomy, because the Jazz are just trying to open this window. The Jazz are trying to start this run, and the Clippers are just trying to barely keep that window open. And you're just kind of at opposite ends of the spectrum in the NBA.
How do you feel like this Jazz team is going to fare against the Clippers?
I think early on, I think they should be competitive. I don't know if we're going to see a lot of Kawhi Leonard. I don't know if we're going to see a lot of Paul George. Paul George didn't finish the season last year with the Clippers because of an ankle injury that he suffered late in the year. So I'm sure they're going to take it extremely slow, make sure nobody gets hurt. Again, that we might only see Kawhi and Paul George play 50 games again this year of the 82 yeah. available. They just don't play a lot. And that's kind of the load management that they've tried to do. And as they get older, I recognize it a little bit, though I don't think it's necessarily helped them. Clearly, they haven't won a title, nor have they been able to avoid injuries. So I don't think that that strategy has worked for them as well as they had hoped. But this is a Clippers team that should be better than the Jazz. But they even got worse this offseason. They lost Eric Gordon to the Suns. They didn't make significant improvements. So I think the Jazz are going to certainly come out hungrier, because a lot of these young guys feel like they have more to prove than anyone, I think, on this Clippers roster.
Okay, Ben, this is a burning question, okay? Why are you not in Hawaii? Like, and are you upset about this? Because I would be.
Hawaii would be great. I wasn't actually sure what all the access was going to be to the team. I know they've done some practices this year, this week, and they did a scrimmage at BYU Hawaii 2 days ago, and that was cool. I think they took yesterday off, and they're going to be back in action on Sunday. No, I got to be here to fill in. I couldn't do this from Hawaii, so I had to make sure I was available to do the Saturday show. So, Michelle, I sacrificed Hawaii to be here with you today for this 45 minutes that we're doing together.
I highly doubt that, but thank you for saying that.
Yeah.
Thank you for saying that my show is, like, so important.
I prioritize. This is paradise. This is better than a Hawaiian beach.
Oh, yeah. Okay, so before we, like, turn around and head to another break, there was an interesting story that came out yesterday, kind of switching gears to Utah football, the Pac-12. John Canzano reported that President Randall was actually heavily, heavily involved in trying to get the negotiation process to head in the right direction, coming up with valuations to try and counter offer. You know, what did you make of that story and what was being said there?
Yeah, bizarre in that it sounds like Taylor Randall was one of the names that initially said, like, hey, $50 million is the target. That's the goal we think Pac-12 teams should be valued at. We've done the math. You know, they have people running the numbers. It's really more of an equation than I think people realize. It is not a total guess. They say, okay, well, there are, you know, X amount of commercials a game. There's X amount of games in the season. This is how much commercials sell for. This is how much sponsorships sell for. You add that up, and that equals, you know, X million dollars. And several people, including Taylor Randall, had come up with this idea that, hey, $50 million should be maybe not the baseline, but the target in a more realistic conversation than the, whatever it was, 27, 23, less than that million that they kind of ended up coming to that they turned down in the first place. Maybe it was even 30 that was the first deal they turned down.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I just don't think they recognized how quickly the landscape was changing. And again, this is not just college football. There's a reason the Jazz just unveiled their streaming service. The regional sports networks died. They went bankrupt because that model didn't work anymore. So yes, while that might have been the price people had been paying for ad space, which is what I suspect Taylor Randall and the rest of these presidents and you know, professors even that they talked about trying to figure out this money in the Pac-12, I don't think they recognized that, yes, while that was the price things were going at, it was no longer going to be the price, and it wasn't just going to naturally grow. It was a bit of a bubble that had burst, and they just didn't realize that bubble was in the motion of bursting already, and that was a little bit irreversible. So I don't blame Taylor Randall for that, but obviously it failed, and when something fails as catastrophically as the Pac-12 did, I do think you deserve criticism, and I do think there was a little bit of greed involved of not recognizing, like, $30 million is a good deal, and that's what you're getting now from the Big 12, and it would have been really good for Oregon State and Washington State to be able to still get that money. It sounds like it would have been enough, at least for a little while, to keep Oregon and Washington involved. And I'm a huge Pac-12 fan. I love the Pac-12. I'm going to miss the Pac-12. I'm excited about the Big 12 for Utah and BYU together. But I liked the Pac-12. I liked what it represented. I liked what they stood for. I liked having this different region in the West that stood alone by itself and I thought had some unique quirks in college football. And I wish it was still around. And so in that aspect, there is some blame to point at President Randall at Utah and the mistakes that were made there.
Yeah, this is an interesting story. I've said from kind of the beginning of when everything unraveled, there's going to be so much that comes out about this that's just going to blow people's minds. And from all different angles, we're going to hear stuff about what the sports networks did that kind of led to this, what the presidents did that led to this, what the Pac-12 commissioners did that led to this. There is a lot of blame to pass around. It's an interesting story. It's an interesting case in sports business management.
Yep.
and kind of what not to do, really.
And at every level. I mean, the president's probably not valuing sports enough in one way. And then, you know, early on in the process, they didn't value sports enough as being, you know, kind of huge features of their schools. And we've known that's been a problem in the Pac-12. And then overvaluing it when they got to the negotiating table, obviously the disastrous commissioner work from Klyavkov that was just horrendous throughout, seemingly. Certainly never picked up any momentum. I mean, yeah, a lot of the leadership issues were key signs of failure. And then, you know, and John Canzano says this in the article, if you haven't read it, while you can point to Taylor Randall and say, like, hey, this was a huge mistake, it's one of several huge mistakes. I mean, it is a drop in a huge bucket of reasons the Pac-12 dissolved.
So sad. So sad. Also looking forward to more of the information coming out as we keep digging into that story a little bit. Well, you know what? It's time to head for a break. On the other side, we will be doing our technical fouls. But before we head off, Utah State fans, come and visit Macy's store in Providence on Saturday, that's today, October 7th, from 12 p.m. to 3 p.m. You can also see me here live and in person until noon today. So come in for fun prizes and chances to win tickets to the Utah State-Colorado State football game that's happening tonight at 8 p.m. Or you can win a Macy's gift card. There are several chances to win every hour. And don't forget, Macy's has you covered from all your tailgating and game day needs with items ranging from smoked meats to fresh cut fruits and veggies. Macy's, happy shopping. You are listening to The Saturday Show on 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone.
If you're coming from the street with dirty shoes on your feet, that's a technical foul. If you switch the radio to some modern music show, that's a technical foul. If you touch the thermostat,
you'll get hit with a bat.
Cause that's a technical foul.
You will feel my wrath.
That's a technical foul.
Personal file, 69, office. He was giving them the business.
A technical foul.
Hello and welcome back into the Saturday Show. This is your host, Michelle Bodkin, live from Macy's in Providence, Utah, doing a tailgate prep part for the Utah State-Colorado State game later on tonight. As you heard, it is time for technical fouls. I am going to turn things over to Ben Anderson. Ben, do you have a technical foul?
I do have a technical foul. I hope I'm not stealing anybody's. Do you have one, Michelle? Am I going to steal yours if I go first?
I do have a technical foul. I don't know if you'll end up stealing mine. If anything is stolen, then we can just talk about it longer. That's fine.
Okay. I'm going to go with Evan Neal, the offensive lineman for the New York Jets, the New York Giants, as the Giants have had maybe the most disappointing of any season of any team in the NFL outside of the Denver Broncos so far this year. And even then, both of them only have one win on the season. Evan Neal was the former top 10 overall pick, plays on the offensive line for the Giants. And look, they've got a lot of problems. Daniel Jones is not a good quarterback, but he would be better if he had a little more time in the pocket. And Evan Neal's part of the reasons why he's not. Well, the Giants got booed in their last game. Because they're getting outscored something ridiculous, like 75-3 in the first half. So far, I mean, it's insane. They just they cannot move the ball, especially in the first half. We remember they got blown out to start the year 40-0 by the Cowboys. So here's what Evan Neal says at the fans booing him in New York, which, Michelle, we know New York fans. Notoriously brutal. Difficult. Brutal, yeah. And as much as we... like to hammer the Jets and all the trouble that they've had, the Giants have been just as bad, if not worse, so far this season. So here's what Evan Neal had to say about those who are criticizing him. And this is really the technical foul. The person that's commenting on my performance, what does he do? Flip hot dogs and hamburgers somewhere? Most critics really don't understand the game of football to the level that we understand in this building. So why would a lion concern himself with the opinion of sheep? I'm just going to focus on Evan and getting better. I honestly do not care what anybody has to say about Evan Neal because they're going to talk anyway. Anyway, at the end of the day, I put a lot of good things on film, but people are going to go and find the bad reps, and that's what they're going to highlight. That's what they're going to put out there. I can't control that, so why should I care? And how can you say when you're really a fan and we're battling our butts off and the game wasn't going well, but the best you can do is boo your home team? So how much of a fan are you really? Hey, Evan Neal, you stink. That's why they're booing you. And guess what? That's totally fair. They get to boo you. You are a professional athlete at this point. As long as they're not crossing the line, and we know what crossing the line is, going after people's family, doxing them, whatever it takes, that's over the line. Booing you in a game when you're playing terrible is totally acceptable, and it is part of the job, and it's part of why you make millions of dollars, and I would never tell a fan how to act when they spend money. But to hammer the fans that do pay good money to go watch your games and then insult them for having jobs, even if it is working at a fast food restaurant, flipping burgers, roasting hot dogs, whatever it is, you have the cushiest job on the planet. Yes, it's physical, but you play sports for a living. You get paid lots of money, and you get paid lots of money even though you're not any good at it, Evan Neal. So my technical foul, in fact, I think that's two technical fouls, and I'm throwing him out of the game. I think he's been disqualified. Evan Neal, you're a bum. Get out of here.
Dang, Ben, tell me how you really feel.
Yeah, I didn't love that from Evan Neal. Play better, or you're going to lose your job. Fine, you're going to be the person without a job soon. So maybe don't be hammering on other people for having their jobs.
Yeah, I can feel that. I can feel that. Jason, do you have a technical foul?
Well, I do, and I was actually thinking about starting with the Dan Enos, offensive coordinator for Arkansas, emailing angry student fans after the game.
Oh, no.
The student fans were complaining, and so he emailed them back. But I changed, I pivoted, and I decided not to go with that one because I've said before on the air here that I grew up in Washington, D.C., and so I'm a fan of all pro sports. Washington, D.C. sports. And so I have to call out my wonderful Washington Commanders after that beautiful egg that they laid against the Chicago Bears. The previously winless Chicago Bears losing 14 straight games in a row, Chicago Bears. And, I mean, they just didn't even bother to show up for the game. I mean, it was if there was ever a game that proved to the new ownership that Ron Rivera and Jack Del Rio really need to go, and it's just time to move on from those guys, even though it's only been like 3.5 years. I mean, that was the game right there to show you that Ron Rivera is just not the guy to have this team ready to play on a short week or whatever the case may be, because I actually didn't even see the game to start with because I was at work, so I had it on my DVR, and by the time it was midway through the second quarter, I pretty much just fast-forwarded to the end to see what the final score was because it was so bad being down 27-3 at halftime. It just doesn't get any worse than that. So my technical foul is the entire Washington Commanders coaching staff for not having the team ready to play. The defense, in fact, the only person I won't throw a technical foul on for the Washington Commanders is Sam Howell, because he actually looked pretty decent during that game, which was nice.
Yeah, you know what? I think Dick Butkus got his last revenge on your team before he passed over the bridge.
I'll go with that.
I'm starting to believe in Justin Fields a little bit. I think Justin Fields is coming along for the Bears. I think he's going to be all right. So maybe this loss in retrospect, even though they were terrible to start the year, and you're right, including blowing that huge lead to the Broncos 2 weeks ago.
Yes.
Maybe at the end of the season, this loss doesn't look quite as bad as it feels right now.
No.
Hopefully we can.
I'm kind of with you, Ben.
Can review this and downgrade your technical foul.
No.
Hopefully they take away the fine. They take away
downgrade
the technical foul.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, that wasn't a real tech.
No, it was terrible.
Ref Blue was whistling correctly.
It was terrible. You can go back and review it if you want and reduce it, but it was still terrible in the moment.
Oh, man. Okay. Well, quickly before we head to our next break and send Ben off, thanks for coming on, Ben. You know, my technical foul also kind of deals with fans. And it's just, it's some of the griping that's happened in Utah world about the Cam Rising situation, other players being hurt when they're coming back. Look, I understand that there's some disappointment there, and I get that there's some frustration at the secrecy. I am with you on that. But some of the things I've seen being said and kind of directed at players, especially, gets at my craw. Like, be nice to those kids. They're doing their best, and they're absolutely frustrated and heartbroken by the injuries that they're dealing with. This is not what they wanted. This is not ideal. They're doing their best to get back. And I think, you know, we kind of heard some of that a little bit this week. And I think it's okay to give them a little bit of grace. That's just me, though. I might be too nice. I don't know.
Michelle, with that being said, I think you're right.
We got to head.
I'm sorry. I think the coaches and the players are more frustrated than anybody. By far, they're more frustrated,
totally. And
that's where all of this is coming from. And honestly, when we start talking about pressure on these players, on these coaches, that's probably where the fan base does need to step up and be more understanding and be like, "Hey, we get it. You guys are trying. You put your bodies on the line. Your jobs are on the line. In this sense, have a little grace there for these guys who are trying to come back." I can't imagine being in Cam Rising's situation where you're trying to carry a team that had expectations of making the playoffs. You're trying to satisfy everybody on that coaching staff, on the roster, because you've been anointed the leader. At the same time, you've got to think about your NFL future, if you have an NFL future, all the while rehabbing like a terribly blown out knee. Like, it's such a unique situation that he finds himself in. I would hope people would have a little grace of how much this is still, what is he, 22, 23 years old? This is not an old person who's been through life. This is a guy who's trying to carry a lot of weight. There's money on the line, and I think he's still trying to make the right decisions. So, yeah, I would hope people would have some grace for Cam Rising and all the issues he's dealing with.
Totally, totally. Okay, with that being said, we got to head to another break. Before we do that, absolutely make sure Utah State fans to come visit Macy's Grocery Store here in Providence. I'm here until noon, so come on down for fun, prizes, and chances to win tickets to the Utah State-Colorado State football game happening tonight, or a Macy's gift card. I have $50 sitting here for the first person that comes and says hi to me. So make sure you come and check that out. And don't forget, Macy's has you covered for all of your tailgating and game day needs with items ranging from smoked meats to fresh-cut fruits and veggies. Macy's, happy shopping. On the other side, we will welcome in Jake Scott. Thank you again, Ben, for coming on. You are listening to The Saturday Show on 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone. All right, we are back at it on the Saturday Show on 97.5 at the KSL Sports Zone. This is Michelle Bodkin, your Utah Utes insider for KSLSports.com, hanging out in Providence, Utah today at the Macy's. Come on and stop by, say hello to me. I have a $50 gift card for the first person that comes on over to say hi. So I want to give that away. I want to help you get your tailgate ready for the Utah State-Colorado State game happening tonight at 8 p.m. Now, we are welcoming on Jake Scott. He will help me finish out this show. But first, as I promised yesterday, Jake, technical foul.
Oh, okay. All right. Can you hear me? Michelle, can you turn on my mic?
Hello. All right. Here we go. Hi.
Oh, there he is.
Michelle, first of all, it is wonderful to hear your voice. I'm so happy to be on the show, and I'm so happy that you saved me a technical foul, because I'm actually going outside of the world of sports. This is an adjusted technical foul, because I'm so bent about it.
Okay, let's hear it. I'm
technical
curious
foul
now.
And I'm not going to call out any jurisdiction, in specific, because I'm not going to put people on blast, but how about parking enforcement? I'm going to go with technical foul on parking enforcement. I came right here from my daughter's soccer game. Shout out to my daughter, Sadie. Banged home a goal today, Michelle. I'm so proud of her. She played best game. I'm so fired up. And her team, you'll love her. Her team name today was the Dragon Mermaids. So shout out to the Dragon Mermaids, who had a killer game. But then, you know, I go to my car to hustle over here, and I guess, I mean, technically, maybe I was illegally parked. But anyway, a whole line of cars, Michelle, like 20 cars. 20 cars parked in this spot, and we got parking tickets.
You're the only one?
No. All 20 got it. But listen,
at least all of you got it.
But listen, like 1,000 people descend on these youth soccer fields, right? There's youth football, youth soccer. It's all going on. There's no, like, they obviously don't have enough parking. This is not like a dangerous spot. Like 20 cars parked there. I mean, is the budget crunch that bad? You got a ticket? Like, let's not worry about it. It's all right. It's cool. We don't have to ticket everybody. We don't have to come out here and make our city budget on the poor parents trying to just watch soccer. The technical foul to that. Be reasonable. Come on.
Do you have any heart?
Thank you. Like, we're just parents trying to support our kids, for crying out loud. So
and do you know the cost of supporting your child? I can't afford that ticket.
Amen. Man, so yeah, I am
so speaking out of turn. I know nothing about raising children or how expensive it is.
Well, let me tell you,
Michelle,
I'm going
to fight for you.
We deserve some sympathy, so I appreciate yours, but technical foul right there.
So Jake, just before we actually get into the more like sporty stuff, how often do you get a ticket?
Oh, very rarely. I'm a by the book driver. I'm a slow driver.
Model citizen.
I honestly like it's not worth it to me to be like a speeder and I don't mind hoofing it a little further for to not get parking tickets. But obviously today I made a mistake, so I don't get tickets often. Maybe that's why I'm bent about it. You strike me though, Michelle, as a fast driver. You getting pulled over all the time for going 90.
I have only been pulled over twice.
Oh, good for you.
The one time was complete BS because I was actually trying to merge onto the freeway.
So only one time deserved it. That's not bad.
Well, and the other time I was pulled over, I did not actually get a ticket for that.
Oh, look at you. So you're a good driver. You're a safe driver, too. Proud of you.
I'm a good driver. I've never been in a car accident, knock on wood. I'm a good driver. I'm a good driver. I do kind of like driving fast, though.
All right.
Not going to lie.
But strategically,
I'm a good driver. Yeah. I'm very strategic.
All right.
One of my ex-boyfriends called me Baby Danica one time.
Hilarious.
Yeah, I'm that girl. But anyway, so I asked Ben this question.
Okay.
I'll ask it to you too.
All right.
To kind of kick off the more sports oriented part of this conversation. Yesterday it came out, John Canzano reported on Taylor Randall's involvement in the $50 million counterquote to ESPN after they offered the Pac-12 $30 million per school. What was your takeaway from that article, from that reporting?
Oh, Michelle, I was so excited to do the show with you today because this is a great topic. I was so disappointed this broke after my show yesterday, and then I was like, oh, man. But I'm coming on with Michelle tomorrow, so no worries. We got plenty of time. I've got so many thoughts, Michelle. I'll start with, first of all, how hilarious is it that Utah's president was the unmentioned bozo president that pushed the $50 million? I just thought, how funny is that? I mean, for that to land locally right here in our lap. I think, you know, in this circumstance, Ben touched on this a little bit, but you know what? Academics making these types of decisions, I mean, are we surprised that they get stuff wrong? I mean, the Pac-12 got a lot of stuff wrong.
Yeah.
And I'll get more nuanced into Taylor Randall's errors or lack thereof here in 1 second. But, you know, are we surprised that television execs are better at this than university presidents? I know Taylor Randall has some business background, and that's why, interestingly enough, he was listened to a little bit more in this whole thing. But, like, you know, some of these professors and then deans and then moved up, you know, English backgrounds, econ backgrounds.
Right.
I mean, let alone playing the politics game of advancing through the university system, which I'm sure is a skill in and of itself.
Not necessarily conducive to negotiating.
No. Well, not TV deals anyway, you know, not. And I think academics in general get lost in their own. Well, I know, you know, I'm a professor. I know these sorts of things. They get lost
Are
in that
you
sort
really,
of thing.
Jake?
You know what I mean? Like you're a professor. You're not necessarily in the real world, right? Or not in the, you know, TV execs are doing this all the time. They're running all these numbers.
Yeah.
Academics aren't. They're in their, well, this is how it should be. Their theories and that sort of thing. And it doesn't necessarily align with what's actually going on. And I think this is a case of that. I mean, listening to a professor or I mean, there's plenty of blame to go around. We can get down to the consultants that George Klyavkov hired. But
Oof.
Let me say that I think Taylor Randall handled this news. I'm not saying he handled the situation right, but he handled this news really well. That Canzano called him, he gave a statement, he gave some nuance to his side of the story. He didn't hide from it. He didn't lie. I'm sure this isn't his best day. He's not really stoked about this news being public. But I thought as far as the way he handled it in interacting with Canzano, I thought he did. That's the right way to do it.
Yeah.
You know, face it, face on. This is what's happening. Here's my statement about it. Here's my side. He didn't hide from anything. I actually really appreciated the way he handled it.
I will say I thought it was kind of interesting because what we were always led to believe, and again, this is one side of the story, and we kind of heard the other side of the story from ESPN beforehand, is that the Pac-12 demanded the $50 million per school, and that was the end of the conversation. At least from the Pac-12 president's perspective, it sounds like the $50 million was just meant to try and be a negotiating cushion, right? You ask for more than you know you're going to get in order to land on the number you really want, which it sounds like that was around 40 to 45 million. Somehow, at least that's the perspective I'm taking, it got lost in translation somewhere, and people got offended and walked away from the negotiating table. I don't know if people are covering their butts. I don't know if George Klyavkov bungled, you know, what the president's really meant, or took it upon himself to say something completely different than what they meant. All I know is, what a freaking mess.
Oh, what a mess. Well, here, this is why Randall was smart to get out in front of it for the exact scenario that you're laying out, Michelle, because nobody, that conversation that went on between the CEO group and George about negotiating strategy and value is the crux of this whole thing, this whole particular part of the story, right? So Randall can get ahead of it and say, well, I just told him that was the jumping off point for negotiation. I didn't think he was going to tell ESPN to stick it. And then what happened was George went in there, said, we want 50. ESPN said best and final. And George said, get bent. So was that George going rogue, or did the CEO group really say, don't come out with a penny less than 50? According to Randall, it was just a jumping off point. I bet you George would tell a different story, but that's why it's smart for Randall to get out in front of it. And I could see that. I could see Klyavkov going in there and said, well, I'm going to play hardball with these guys and then just getting pantsed at the negotiation table. But also, I could see the CEOs totally misreading the room and saying, go in there and play and take a hard line about it. I don't know if we're ever going to know the answer to that, honestly.
I think it's going to kind of – we're going to hear a couple of different versions of this story, and – the landing point is probably somewhere in the middle of it, would be my guess. I have heard some conversations in the past about George Klyavkov and him not really understanding. Obviously, he has a great understanding of how, like, network negotiations, TV negotiations go, but not in the college football world. And that was his grave mistake. He had some people within the Pac-12 that were more familiar with that area that he butted heads with, and they ended up leaving. And, you know, he was just kind of left to figure it out on his own, and he figured it out wrong, was another version of this story I've heard. Again, it's so interesting. There's so many tentacles to this one. Well, and it's mind-blowing, really.
Well, they misread it all. I mean, like, the thing is, it doesn't let anybody off the hook. The president and the commissioner both created this mess together. And you can point fingers about who did what, but there's no doubt about it. Like, basics. Michelle, you and I are not, you know, high-level business people. But I think you and I even know that if you're negotiating with only one party, and there's really only one party to negotiate with, well, you don't really have a ton of leverage. I mean, ESPN, the mouse, was the only one who could give them even close to what they wanted. And that's evident by the Apple deal garbage that they tried to pull out at the end of this whole thing, which was completely untenable. I mean, ridiculous. It would have been a nightmare to take that whole thing. But if there's only one person to negotiate with, you have to know that. You have to know that ESPN is your ticket. I mean, you have to know where the market is going. You have to see, I know Ben brought this up and it's a good point, you've got to see that regional sports networks are folding, going out of business left and right. You got to think to yourself, man, things are changing. And then maybe the most egregious one, Michelle, is that the Big Ten was misreported on the value of their media network deal. It was not reported correctly. Kevin Warren fed bad numbers to the press. And so, and Canzano talks about this, right? That that's part of the reason they thought that they were worth 50. Well, if the Big Ten is worth this much, well then, you know, we've got to be worth this much. Well, you got to have the right intel, right? I mean, what are you doing just reading the newspaper? You got to know. You got to have sources. You got to have, listen, what are you paying consultants for if they don't know the answer to those questions? How do you get buffaloed by bad reporting and basically, you know, lies coming out of the Big Ten? How do you not confirm that? How do you not know that? See, that's where I was getting at with the whole academic thing. Mm-hmm. Like, you're not in the real world. You just read the newspaper. And so you go, if they're worth this, we got to be worth this. Well, you got to know that that's not what they got. And actually what's going on in the real world. And that's a mistake. You know, those reasons, I mean, they're excuses, but they're mistakes. Yeah. They need to know that. That's your job.
Yeah, those are, I mean, lots of monster missteps. Speaking of buffaloes, though, and the Apple deal, I mean, it's so, so fascinating. This is, you know, hindsight, looking at things. Everybody was so panicked about that subscribership. Now, this was before we've seen the TV numbers that Colorado under Dion has pulled out. Now, this is a world of hypotheticals, but what if Colorado didn't pull out so soon? What if Colorado stayed, stuck it out, they signed that agreement? Do you think that they would get that subscribership just based off of what's happening at Colorado with Dion Sanders? Because everybody wants to watch that show.
I'm going to say no.
You still think no?
No, and I'm bendable though. So talk me out of this if you're not buying.
Well,
my
I want to know why you say no.
So here's the problem with the subscribing stream is that you only broadcast to the devoted fans. You're only broadcasting the people who are subscribing to that for the Pac-12 are you and me, Michelle. There are people that are going to watch the games no matter what, right? Whether it's fans of teams or fans of the conference or media or whatever. Okay. We're going to be the customers for that. The peripheral fan, and this is the problem with the model, the peripheral fan is still flipping around on TV. You know, the college football fan in Chicago is just flipping around the stations. And that's where the real interest in Colorado has come from. It's not millions of new Colorado Buffalo fans. It's I'm going to flip by the game to watch Dion. I don't think is getting your Big Ten fan to subscribe to Pac-12 football just to watch Dion. They're going to flip over to Big Fox and they're probably going to stay with the game, but are they going to pay whatever it was going to cost to Apple to subscribe? No way. I don't think so. So I don't think maybe it moves the needle a little bit, but I don't think all of a sudden, I think Dion would get lost. I don't think he would attract more subscribers. I think his story would die quicker because nobody would watch
it. You think?
Yeah, I do.
Because I don't know. I just hear so many people talk about, like, their grandma that's never cared about football all of a sudden wants to watch Deion Sanders in Colorado. Like, it's been such a fascinating phenomenon. I don't know. I think it maybe could have pushed the needle, but alas, we're never going to know.
No, it doesn't matter.
It's not even a thing. It's not even a thing now. But I think it's an interesting thought exercise. Like, what if?
Well, Colorado was smart for parlaying at least the momentum that they had there into a no-brainer into the Big 12. I mean, the Big 12 didn't think twice about it. Colorado was the first to go, right?
Yeah.
I mean, so at very least they maximized their value at the time. Even if the Pac-12 wasn't going to, they did.
There is something to be said for that, and especially, again, you look at how the Big 12 is looking at the moment. Who knows? Every year is different, but if we're going solely based off of what things look like this year for where everybody's currently at and try to forecast it to next year, Colorado might be sitting pretty in that conference.
Oh, I think the conference is wide open. I think you're right about that. But, you know, ebbs and flows, right? The Pac-12 stunk for years, mm-hmm. and now it's great. So
yeah.
you really don't. Yeah, I know. What the Big 12 is missing is a big dog. And I don't think that simply winning equates to that. They're missing, like, I shouldn't say a big dog. I should say a big brand.
Yeah.
Like, they're missing a big, powerful brand. And Utah could win the league 3 years in a row, and they're just not going to be that for a variety of reasons. I don't think BYU would be that. I don't think, who would be a candidate to be that? It's not Baylor. It's not Texas Tech. I think that's their problem. To me,
I think the options are, you said Utah couldn't be. I think Utah's one. I think BYU, potentially TCU, Colorado. If none of those pick up their game and grow exponentially, yeah, it's going to be a huge question mark for that conference.
But, like, TCU was in the finals last year, and they're not it.
Yeah, but, I mean, this is something that takes some time, though, right? Like, it's a process. I think of the bunch at the moment, Utah's the furthest along. But if they have a slip up, if things start going backwards on them on a consistent basis, then, you know, that's all for naught.
Well, the problem is it's just not all about winning. Like, there aren't enough Utah fans. Like, BYU generates more buzz than Utah does. Like, I think BYU would be a better candidate than Utah would be.
I don't know about that, Jake.
Why? BYU has more fans, I'll tell you that.
I think, yes, generally speaking.
And I'm not trying to take a shot at Utah fans. There's just a lot of BYU fans.
I mean, there's that inner church promotion thing that goes on. So yep. I don't totally disagree with that. But I do think Utah is a growing brand. They're a brand that's now getting recognized and respected in the SEC. And it's been a crazy thing to kind of watch and observe. They're a brand that's kind of growing and being respected in Big Ten circles because of some of the teams that they played. Now, I still think they have a ways to go. I don't think they're the end all be all of college football. You know, there's still things that have to happen. They still have to continue being, I think, a top 15, top 10 team in the country year in and year out. If they can consistently keep doing that for another 5 years, you know, they maybe could be a Clemson type brand, and that would be fantastic for the Big 12. But again, if you have setbacks, if people stop buying into the NIL end of it, and to be honest, we need to go to break. On the other side, we should talk about this, the NIL deal. I think that was a huge reason why that NIL deal came down the way that it did, is Utah has a vision and Utah has an idea of what they want to be. They see an opportunity and they're trying to take it. We'll see if it works out for them. Okay, we got to head to a break. Before we do that, though, come visit me at Macy's Grocery Store in Providence today. Today's Saturday. I am here for about another half hour. Come see me for fun, prizes, and chances to win tickets to the Utah State-Colorado State football game or a Macy's $50 gift card that nobody has come and claimed because no one wants to come say hi to me. This is really upsetting, guys. $50 to get your tailgate going for tonight. There's chances to win every hour. And don't forget, Macy's has you covered for all your tailgating and game day needs with items ranging from smoked meats to fresh cut fruits and veggies. Macy's, happy shopping. This is the Saturday Show on 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone. Welcome back into the Saturday Show on 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone. Michelle Bodkin here, taking you for the ride. And I have Jake Scott by my side. Well, actually not by my side. He's in studio. I'm up here in Providence, Utah.
I'm jealous, Michelle. Is it gorgeous up there?
It is so pretty. Oh, I have this lovely view of the mountains, and they are just ablaze at the moment. So I'm not mad about this.
No. Are you going to hang out up there after the show? Are you going to see what Logan's all about?
Probably not. I need to get back and get some work done, but I think I will take a little bit of time and maybe stop and take some pictures of the canyon on my way back
down. Totally should.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. It was so beautiful. If you haven't been up through this way, definitely do it. And definitely do it because I'm sitting here with a $50 Macy's gift card. Come say hi to me. Come get your tailgate ready for tonight, guys. Aggie fans, show out.
Where you at?
I am at the Macy's in Providence.
Go see Michelle. Get 50
come
bucks.
See me.
Come on, $50. Crazy. Get over there.
Goodness gracious. So before we headed to break, we were kind of in the middle of an interesting conversation about brand building. And Utah did a very interesting thing this week. You actually had a chance to ask me about it yesterday. Now I get to put you on the spot and ask you about this. You know, what did you think of that whole NIL deal with the 85 leased trucks for Utah football?
I think it's good marketing. I don't like NIL, honestly. Mm-hmm. I don't. I think there are better ways to accomplish what they were trying to accomplish, but whatever it is, it's what we got. And the hypocrisy of the university isn't supposed to be involved, and the university's involved, and it just bugs me. But that aside, Michelle, it's good marketing. I mean, everybody's going to follow suit. I don't know. You know, it's about branding. It's about getting your name out there in association with NIL. Like, this is a school that values NIL. Recruits want to probably take note of that they know that they're going to get taken care of in maybe a cool way. I think the fact that they went with trucks, it was similar to Built Bar basically giving scholarships to walk-ons in a sense that it grabs a headline, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, the Wall Street mm-hmm. Journal wrote about the trucks. Who else wrote about it? I mean, everybody wrote about Utah giving their players trucks, and that's the win. You know, I think it's sad that Witt has to stand up there and beg for money. I'm sure he doesn't love that, but I mean,
I don't think many of the coaches like that.
Oh, I'm sure they all hate it. I'm sure they all absolutely hate it that this is part of their job now, that they have to fundraise even more than they had to before. I mean, I'm sure they absolutely hate it, but I mean, you alluded to it, like, this is what you have to do now. So you can either be a stick in the mud like me and just complain about it, or you can get out ahead of the curve, which is what Utah did. So it's smart. So it was a good marketing move.
I just keep finding myself wondering, how do I get in on this NIL thing? You know what? I would love a truck or like a – well, actually, I don't want a truck. I will not drive a truck. Truck is too big. But like a free vehicle –
well, can we also say that they're not giving them trucks, which again,
it is a lease.
They're just leases. And I love it that you lose that lease as soon as you're not on the team. So,
I think that's fair. I think that's absolutely fair.
But it's not the reward that they're pretending that it is.
I mean, it kind of is. I think it helps out a lot, to be honest. Do you know how many guys I was driving around in my little 300ZX in college? Which, by the way, most of them did not fit in that car.
300ZX, sweet.
Yeah.
Fine. But, I mean, they're driving around a billboard. I wouldn't I don't know. I bet that, speaking of parking tickets, they're going to get a parking ticket every time they park. I don't know. It's fine. It's fine. But let me ask you this, Michelle. If you were if you were advising a young athlete on where to go play football, and they came to you and said, "Well, if I go here, I get a truck lease," wouldn't you tell them, "Why don't you, well, you should pick the spot that's best for you to succeed, to go to the NFL, or to get a great education, or to all sorts of things"? If someone close to me said that I'm going to pick somewhere to go because of a truck lease, I'd call them crazy. I'd say that's ridiculous. There are so many more like long-sighted. And imagine if your nephew was picking between Stanford and Utah, and he said, "Oh, I'm going to take Utah because I get a truck lease." You'd smack him in the back of the head and say, "What's the matter with you? You're gonna make enough money to buy 10 trucks in 10 years if you go to Stanford." You know what I mean? Or like if someone's picking between Utah and BYU and they're a stud cornerback and they said, "Well, I'm thinking about Utah, but BYU has a better NIL deal," I'd say, "Knock it off. You go to Utah, you're going to be out on an island and you're going to be basically trying out for the NFL every time you take the field. And look at the long list of corners they've put into the next level. I don't care how much the Bill Barr money you're going to get. Go somewhere else." I don't know. I don't like it. If somebody's making a decision based on a truck, they should reevaluate their priorities.
I don't disagree with you there. I think it's something to partially be considered, but I don't think that should be the biggest part of your reasoning. It should be things like culture. It should be coaching stability. It should be development. It should be history of putting players in the NFL, NBA, graduation rates.
Yeah, it should be, I want to be a business student. And wow, I really like that business school. Like that's how it's supposed, the decision's supposed to be made, but we don't care about that crap anymore.
I don't mind that also, you know, it maybe gets weighed in a little bit. Are there things that help support me while I kind of put in this work? And again, that shouldn't be the complete and total juxt of why you decide to go somewhere. I think that's foolish. But I think, you know, noticing the support system, some of the things that can potentially help you get where you want to go by taking some stress off your plate is not a horrible idea. It just can't be the only reason.
Yeah, in concept, I hear you for sure. But you know what they know is that young people are dumb. And I'm not even saying that as that critical, because you know what? I was dumb too. Absolutely was dumb at that age. But they know, like, it's the whole philosophy behind Oregon's fancy uniforms. You know, like, oh, young people are dumb and they like flashy uniforms, so we'll have flashy uniforms and that will give us an edge in recruiting. And it's probably true. But how dumb is that? So they know that young people make big decisions for dumb reasons. And instead of, like, focusing on education, they lean into the dumb.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, not every player weighs the things that they should. And a lot of that, you know, is due to the support system, I think, that they have at home, too, and the situation that surrounds them, unfortunately. You know, sometimes the best choices are not always made in the best interest of said player.
Yeah. Things are complicated.
And that's really unfortunate. And I do think NIL, you know, kind of throws another wrench in all of that that can be complicated. And, you know, I think we are going to see stories of players that make mistakes in choosing where to go for their college education because they get distracted. They and their family gets distracted by the shiny object. So...
But it's no longer about education.
I think that is a component.
Yeah, yeah. It's just not about education anymore. And I think that is a real shame. I mean, if you look at bettering people's lives, I mean, how many millions of people, and I'm using the word millions on purpose, have college athletics pulled out of poverty and given an opportunity to really succeed in life? And we're just losing track of all of that. People just don't care anymore. And Witt himself will tell you that. This is what was his prediction? The top 25 NIL schools would be the top 25 in the country. I mean, I don't necessarily think he's wrong, but I mean, I think that's a shame. I think young people are being misguided. And I get it that families struggle, and maybe this is a controversial mm-hmm. opinion, but since when is it a college young person's job to support family? Like, they're not the adults yet. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And that's hard, and that's judgy on my part.
That's the only way they see out.
Yeah, I get it. I get it. And I don't mean for that opinion to be so harsh. It used to be
that college education, that piece of paper. Yeah. But unfortunately, I will say as well, I think that paper is kind of worthless anymore.
Oh, man, that's a whole new
society.
I know.
I'm opening a whole can of worms as someone that loved my time in college, loved learning new things, really consider myself more of an academic than a jock by any stretch of the imagination. I think college is kind of worthless.
What was your major, Michelle? Was it communication or what did you do?
No, I'm a psych major.
Oh, I knew that, actually. Yes, I forgot.
Yeah, you did know that. I talk about it all the time.
I knew that, actually.
You did know that. Yeah, I'm a psych major. And here's the thing. I think my degree is actually really, really useful, but no employers value it.
Yeah.
Which is mind-blowing.
I hear you.
Like, I mean, really, in society, like, it's all about networking and reading people and understanding people and getting to know people. Which is, like, what psychology teaches you to do.
Right.
And yet nobody wants to pay you for it. So it's everybody looks at you like, psychology degree. Like, what are you going to do with that? So, and I always joke all the time that, you know, once the players and coaches find out that I am actually a psych major and I'm not really interviewing them, I'm psychoanalyzing them, they no longer want to talk to me anymore.
That's funny. Most people say that about a communication, too. I tell people that I was a communication major. I tell people all the time I'm like the one guy on the planet who actually uses it. I get where you're coming from, and that certainly the value of that piece of paper is, I don't think, going up. So I agree with you there. But as far as NIL goes, Utah's doing what they've got to do. BYU's doing what they got to do. I mean, yep. I'm sure Utah State totally. Is doing as much as they possibly can. Right on down to Weber State, trying to compete. I just think it's unfortunate that this is where we are. You know, I mean,
I think it's unfortunate that this was put into place with like zero parameters. I think that's where it really, really went wrong.
Oh yeah, well now we're talking involving legislatures, Michelle. If we want to open up new cans of worms, but that's exactly what needs to happen. Is the federal government needs to get off its backside and figure out some parameters to rein in what is the wild, wild west. And what I would argue is not good for young people in its present form. It's just not. I mean, even down to opening the door to let boosters compromise players, you know, and compromise the team for that matter. You know, I'm giving this guy this much money and he's not getting touches and this sort of thing. I mean, it's not, you're right. It wasn't thought out at all. And it still isn't.
No.
And there's no way to do it unless the federal government does it. And I just, do either one of us see them agreeing on anything, let alone this?
You know, at this point, I think it's really hard to put the genie back in the bottle.
Yeah.
It's really hard to put strict rules on something that you started out with no rules. I think there's going to be revolt. It's going to be really college football is in such an interesting place right now.
It's a mess.
And Utah and BYU and Utah State, they're all in interesting places having to try and figure that out and manage that. I'm curious to see, you know, what ultimately ends up happening with all of these things and our teams locally here, because it could either go really well or it could go not very well.
Can I ask you a quick question? I know we're up against it and this requires way more time, but you're a great supporter and you cover women's sports and up there at the U, you did great coverage on the basketball run this year, which was really fascinating. But if college football breaks off, right, which I'm personally not convinced isn't against the law, but let's say they figure it out and that college football breaks off and they make basically another pro league, that's how many scholarships that football disappears. So according to Title IX, that's what, probably 100 fewer scholarships for female athletes? You have any thoughts on that?
Ooh, you know what? I had, until you brought that point up, I had never considered that. What that would potentially mean for Title IX and making sure that women's sports are taken care of and well represented at universities. I would hope people would step up and do the right thing and continue to support and put forth effort in their women's sports, because I think there's also an interesting market there. I think last year was a great year, not just locally, but I think nationally, and people really recognizing and appreciating women's sports. College gymnastics is at an all-time high in viewership and interest. People love watching those young women do what they do. I think college women's hoops was at an all-time high last year. And I mean, let's be very honest and frank here. I thought their tournament was way more entertaining than what the men put forth. And I have theories and opinions as to why that is. But I don't know what you do in that case. That you just put a whole thought in my head that I've never thought about.
Yeah, and think about it, Michelle. How many?
It's a little scary.
How many women's sports programs? I'm talking about entire programs. Whew. Actually exist because they have to offset the football scholarships, because it's required by law that they offset the football scholarships with women's scholarships. So how many actual programs is that? Because you think women's basketball is, yeah, how many scholarships? 15 scholarships these days, fewer? You know, baseball. Something and those wouldn't be the first sports on the chopping block. But, I mean, we're talking like track and diving and field hockey and all these programs that really only exist because they have to exist to offset the football program.
Yeah. That is a whole mess that I would have to really, really put some thought into. Dang you, Jake.
Well, again,
Saturday. I don't want to think that hard. Jeez.
Might be because of Title IX, it might actually be illegal for college football to break off, which nobody talks about. If they formed their own entity and all of a sudden there is no association between the university and the football program, other than maybe like the logo. I mean, I think maybe they could pull that off. But
maybe,
you know what? I'd be sick to my stomach. Title IX is a great law that has absolutely changed. Sports, participation in sports, sports for youth. It is a wonderful, wonderful law that, I don't know, if we're trying to circumvent all that, are we really doing the right thing? And then if they succeed, how many women programs go away because they're no longer required to do it? I mean, I'm with you. I'd like to think that we'd keep it up out of the goodness of our own heart, but I'm also a cynic. The universities don't usually do that.
Think about the dragon mermaids.
Think about the dragon mermaids. Yes. Yes.
The future little athletes coming out of the dragon mermaids.
I'm a girl dad, man. We got to think about this stuff. And you know what? It's really important. I'm saying that, you know, kind of jokingly, but it's really important.
It is important.
It's really important. And I'm really pro Title IX. I think it's been great for our country and great for sports. And so these are the things I worry about, Michelle.
And rightfully so. Again, you have a daughter that this potentially could affect somewhere down the road. And it's a serious conversation to be had. But perhaps in depth again another time, because we definitely need to get to a break here. Before we go, though, Utah State football fans, come to the Macy's Grocery Store in Providence today. I've got about 15 minutes here. I still have this $50 gift card. I don't know what y'all are doing. Come say hi to me. And come in for, you know, some fun prizes and a chance to win tickets to the Utah State-Colorado State football game later on tonight. Again, I have this Macy's gift card. Someone please come claim it. $50 to help you with your tailgate. And don't forget, Macy's has you covered for all your tailgating and game day needs with items ranging from smoked meats to fresh cut fruits and veggies. Macy's, happy shopping. On the other side, Jake and I are going to wrap this show up, get in maybe a few thoughts about Utah and BYU on their bye weeks. You are listening to the Saturday Show on 97.5 The KSL Sports Zone. Okay, I think I get this. Welcome back, everybody. We are wrapping up the Saturday show on 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone. I do work hard for my money. Dang right I do. Absolutely. Michelle Bodkin, wrapping up your Saturday here in Providence, Utah, looking at these beautiful mountains. I am at Macy's. You have about 5 minutes, Aggie fans, to come and claim this gift card. Come say hi to me. $50 goes to your tailgate for the Utah State-Colorado State game tonight. I know that's useful to you. Come and say hi to me. I shouldn't have to even beg for this. Like, just come say hi and get the $50.
$50. Do it.
$50. It gets you somewhere. It's better than a kick in the pants.
Yeah, that's for sure.
Jake Scott here with me wrapping things up. You know, we talked a lot about Utah. Utah and BYU are on bye this week, which is why we are pumping up this Utah State game. I think it's pretty obvious what Utah needs to work on through this bye week. They need to get healthy and they need to fix their offense. But I'm curious what your thoughts are on BYU. Obviously, they got their first win in the Big 12 era. Against Cincinnati at home last week, riding into their bye week on a high note. What does this BYU Cougars team need to do this week?
Well, health is a thing for them too. And Ben Bywater, for example, was on the station earlier this week, says he should be good to go by TCU, which is terrific news. But my answer to your question, I think, would be figure out the run game because it needs to be better. It needs to be. And I know LJ Wright, the freshman, I actually think he's doing a really good job and is proving that he's a guy. But they need more production, period, out of that position. And in fact, sorry, I'm trying to bring up exactly their statistics, but LJ Martin is 289 yards on the season, 4 yards a carry, 4 touchdowns. You know, that's okay, right? I mean, that's a good baseline for him, but they've got to have someone else. I mean, Aiden Robbins has basically been a no-show, and maybe health has something to do with that, but Michelle, they are getting nothing out of anybody else, period, in the run game. And I think Keaton Slovis has been fine, but they need more. They gotta figure out how they're going to run the ball because they're going to have to put up a bunch of points to compete in the Big 12. And I think the passing game is capable, but they need more. They're not an air raid offense. They got to have something out of the run game.
Yeah, definitely. Do you think that their problems are partially attached to the offensive line? Or are they just not getting enough push for those guys to kind of find holes and blow through?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's a group running the ball, you know, that's a team effort.
Yeah.
Absolutely has something to do with the guys up front. And so, yeah, BYU's got to figure out how to open up lanes for those guys. And it's a lot easier when you have, you know, Harvey Unga or Curtis Brown or somebody, you know, all the great backs that BYU's had, but they got to help the freshmen out. Give them a place to go.
I couldn't have said it better myself. Let's get to work, guys. Let's finish the last half of this season strong, Utes and Cougs. And, of course, the Aggies are looking for their first win in Mountain West Conference play. Again, taking on Colorado State today at 8 p.m. That will about wrap it up for me. Big thank you to Jason Jones behind the glass. Big thank you to our remote tech, Sean Croshaw, for making sure that all the equipment up here in Logan is working okay. And then, of course, for Ben Anderson and Jake Scott for jumping on and carrying the conversation with me today. This was fun, guys.
Michelle, you are the best. You say you work hard. You bet your bottom dollar you do. Appreciate what you do, and thanks for having me on. I was excited about it.
Yeah, no, we'll definitely have to do it again. Well, that is going to wrap things up for me here at the Macy's Grocery Store here in Providence. Again, come check them out. Get ready for the tailgate. Get ready for Colorado State later on tonight, 8 p.m. kickoff up here in Logan. You have been listening to the Saturday Show on 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone.